I will call the remote hearing, this remote hearing of the Environment and Natural Resources Finance and Policy Committee to order. Today is January 22nd, 2021, which is a palindromic date if anybody is interested. This meeting was held in, is held in accordance with Rule 10.01, which was passed and allows for remote hearings. All remote hearings are recorded and live streamed by House Public Information. The clerk will take the roll to determine attendance.
Hanson, Rick.
Hanson, Rick, here.
Hanson, present. Wasilewicz, Amy.
Wasilewicz, present.
Wasilewicz, present. Heinzman, Josh.
Heinzman, present.
Heinzman, present. Acomb, Patty.
Acomb, present.
Acomb, present. Acklin, Susan.
Acklin, present.
Acklin, present. Backer, Jeff.
Backer, present.
Becker, present. Becker, Finn, Jamie.
Becker, Finn, present.
Becker, Finn, present. Eklund, Rob.
Eklund, present.
Eklund, present. Fisher, Peter.
Fisher, present.
Fisher, present. Green, Steve.
Green, present.
Green, present. Igo, Spencer.
Igo, present.
Igo, present. Jordan, Sydney.
Jordan, present.
Jordan, present. Keeler, Heather.
Keeler, present.
Keeler, present. Lee, Fu.
Lee, present.
Lee, present. Lippert, Todd.
Lippert, present.
Lippert, present. Lewick, Dale.
Lewick, present.
Lewick, present. Morrison, Kelly.
Morrison, present.
Morrison, present. Nelson, Nathan.
Nelson, present.
Nelson, present. Tice, Tama.
Tice, present.
That concludes the roll.
The quorum is present. The next item on the agenda is the minutes for Tuesday, January 19th, 2021. Representative Nelson, have you looked over the minutes?
Yes, I have.
Would you like to move them?
Yes, I'll move the minutes.
Representative Nathan Nelson moves the minutes for January 19th, 2021. All those in favor say aye.
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 All opposed? Minutes are approved. Members, the next item of business is a bill of mine, so I'm going to virtually hand the gavel over to the Vice Chair, Vice Chair Wasilewicz.
Thank you, Chair Hanson. Chair Hanson, would you like to move your bill?
Yes, Madam Chair, I would move that House File 91 be recommended to be re-referred to the Ways and Means Committee.
And Chair Hanson, I understand that you have an author's amendment. Will you move that A2 amendment and provide a brief explanation for us?
Madam Chair, I would like to actually take testimony before the amendment because we may have we've had some recent information that I think will be presented that may be needed to revise the amendment. So if we could dispense with delay the A2 amendment and maybe move right into the bill and then get some testimony.
Sure, yep, we can do that, Chair Hanson, if you want to proceed, whether that's you want to give a brief overview or move right into testimony, go ahead.
Members, I'll start with some, thanks, Madam Chair, start with some brief testimony. This is the third bill in front of the committee that deals with some unfinished business from the last legislative session. This committee has grappled with how to deal with cleanups with dry cleaners for some time, and we have had ongoing legislation both in 19 and then in 20. As a result of the 19 legislation, we actually reached a compromise agreement between the Pollution Control Agency, the House, the Senate, and the Dry Cleaners Association. That agreement was included in the omnibus package at the end of session. And we did try to pass it out individually during several of the special sessions, but that did not happen. And so when the magic hour of the fiscal year ending on June 30th, 2020, the agreement disappeared. What I am attempting to do in House File 91 is to try to salvage some components of that agreement. And that agreement was somewhat comprehensive. But there are things that in that past agreement that cannot occur right now because both time and money have moved on. So what I'm attempting to do in this bill, and we'll hear more from the amendment, is to keep the components that were included in the bill, where we would make sure that those dry cleaners, those small businesses, those owner operators that have dry cleaners who are paying into a fund, but also have cleanup from PERC, perchlorate, that is used in the dry cleaning industry, not with every dry cleaner, but with some dry cleaners, to use that, make sure that they are getting reimbursed for the expenses that occur for cleanup. When this system was set up 30 years ago, there were a lot more dry cleaners, and the fee that was applied to those dry cleaners to keep money in the fund for those cleanups was lower because there were more dry cleaners. Now there are fewer dry cleaners, and I think you'll hear from the Dry Cleaners Association that the fees have gone up, and there was a backlog of cleanups because there were not the funds to pay for those cleanups. We want to make sure we're getting those cleanups to occur. In addition, we had testimony last year where there's new equipment that in the city of Minneapolis, they have transitioned off of PERC and have the equipment to do dry cleaning without PERC. And so we would use a model elsewhere, often in agriculture where we have cost share. We would take funds and use them for cost share to help pay the cost of transitioning the equipment into non-PERC dry cleaning equipment. And then finally, we would have a ban on PERC. Obviously, COVID hit. There was money that was appropriated in 2019, $600,000 to look at a legal way of looking at doing a legal analysis to see if there were funds available through insurance policies with the dry cleaners. That report was just completed by the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, and there is about roughly $255,000 unexpended from that those funds. So in general, what I'm trying to do here is to salvage what we can from that agreement to try to help out the dry cleaners, clean up contamination from PERC, and prevent future contamination by transitioning off of PERC and then having an ultimate ban. The amendment will clarify some of that based on existing information, and I think the testimony from the Pollution Control Agency and the dry cleaners will also assist, so I would defer to them.
Thank you, Chair Hansen, and I do have a couple of testifiers here on the agenda. If Mr. Oon, I'm not sure if that's how you say your last name, from the Minnesota Cleaners Association, if he's here, if he'd be
Thank you, Madam Chair.
To testify.
Yep. Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Keith Downey, and I volunteer my time as the president of the Minnesota Cleaners Association, and I'm the owner of East Metro Clean and Press. I would like to thank the committee for allowing this testimony today. While we had hoped to testify on the bill as previously introduced, we understand why it had to be amended. I do want to give you a little bit of background on the dry cleaners over the last year, 10 months specifically. The dry cleaners for the state of Minnesota are under extreme pressure to keep their doors open. Most dry cleaners' revenue is down well over 50%, with some down over 80% since the pandemic started. We have many who are barely hanging on and are afraid that they cannot pay their bills and fees. We have already seen multiple dry cleaners close their doors for good. This bill will help address some of the issues that the dry cleaners face pertaining to the dry clean fund and also help the industry transition to more sustainable cleaning methods. One part of this bill prioritizes that dry cleaners get reimbursed first from the dry clean fund. Putting the dry cleaner reimbursement first from the fund will help them immensely, as they may not have access to the resources they need to be able to pay for those cleanup costs up front. This bill also has in it a sunset date on the use of perchloroethylene, also known as PERC, as a dry cleaning method in the state of Minnesota. The Minnesota Cleaners Association estimates that there are only around 20 or so PERC machines left in the entire state of Minnesota. We were able to reach out to most of these owners and most of them conveyed the message to us that they supported a ban on PERC as long as they have the financial help and enough time to swap out their PERC machines. Many of them were even enthusiastic they could even get some sort of help considering their current financial situation. However, with new machines costing well over $40,000 to $50,000 a piece, not including installation, many of these small owners who are left may not have the resources to be able to swap out these machines. Most of these are the smallest operators, and they are spread throughout the state of Minnesota. While it is possible there will be used machines on the market that will help mitigate these costs, we need to be sensitive to the fact that post-COVID, the entire dry cleaning industry may take years to get their feet back under them. The absolute last thing we would want is for a PERC ban coupled without some sort of financial help that would lead to other dry cleaners being forced out of business. We will continue to work with the authors on this bill. In addition, we hope we can continue to work to resolve the remaining issues with our registration fees continuing to increase every year. Many dry cleaners are having a hard time meeting their obligations and the fees in the past. And with our revenue down so much since COVID, many more are not even able to pay the registration fees this year. Some are terrified, afraid. I've had multiple conversations with some of these dry cleaners asking, am I going to be put in jail because I can't pay my taxes and my fees right now? As dry cleaners go out of business, the burden will continue to increase on the remaining dry cleaners if a long-term solution cannot be found. We want to thank Representative Hansen and Representative Eklund as authors on our bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Owney. Next on the list is Kirk Kadopka from the MPCA. You can identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Chair and committee members. For the record, my name is Kirk Kadopka. I'm Assistant Commissioner with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. I work on land issues, which include our cleanup programs. So thank you for the opportunity to testify today. Wanted to thank the authors too for the bill. There are some good provisions in here, and there is one I'll highlight towards the end here that we do have some concerns with. But as mentioned by the Dry Cleaner Association, the prioritization of reimbursements going out to those operators who have paid the fees and not others that are eligible is something that we believe is a good thing. And just to give an example and talk about this in a little bit more on why that has a direct benefit to dry clean operators, is about 70 to 80% of the reimbursement requests we get in are from non-operators. They're from others that are eligible for the fund. And usually these are building owners, strip mall owners, property management companies, and not actually the dry cleaner that pays in. And so right now we have $620,000 in reimbursement requests. So what happens is the applicant does the cleanup and then they seek a reimbursement through the agency from allowable expenses and turn in their invoices and that, and we make that reimbursement. Right now it's based on a first come, first serve. Of that 620,000, right now just shy of 200,000 are for those that are operating dry cleaners. The rest are for those owners or property management companies that we talked about that actually lease the dry cleaners. Right now in the account, in the dry cleaner account, is $213,000. So we have enough right now by passing that first provision, we would be able to complete all the reimbursements that are allowable under the law for those dry cleaners. And so that's a good piece. And because of that, that's why we don't believe the $255,000 that are right now set aside coming from the remediation fund to go to the dry cleaning account is needed. If our goal is to really address those who are paying in the fee, help them get their reimbursements, the language in the bill already does that instead of applying additional dollars there. For those that have been around before, as we mentioned, there are some larger concerns and problems with a dry cleaner account. It is not a solvent fund. It creates these long backlogs of reimbursements. The fees are not based on the ability to pay, and there are changes there that could be done and a number of other problems. But we believe before taking money and putting it into the account and taking it from other worthy projects that we should have that long-term fix in place, because otherwise we will just keep having to come back and do that transfer of money. And right now the remediation fund is used for funding those locations where there is not a responsible party. There is no one else to do the investigation in neighborhoods or put a treatment system or drinking water system in someone's home. The remediation fund is used by the agency to do that type of work. And so we do always want to keep that protected for that use. So with that, I would like to just reiterate that we do support those provisions on the prioritization. And we actually think that gets to the goal that the chair, Representative Hansen, has put forward to get the dry cleaners to have their reimbursements done in a very timely fashion with the available dollars, and additional resources are not needed at this time. Thank you very much, Chair and committee members.
Thank you, Commissioner Kudelka. Chair Hansen, did you want to do the amendment now? Do you want questions? What's your preferred process here?
There may be members that have questions. I think that would help clarify things because we have different moving pieces in this, and I think the more questions about that, the better it may be. So if there are members that have questions, I would defer to them.
Okay. All right. We'll take member questions. I see Representative Heintzman has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And maybe Commissioner Kudelka could clarify a little bit. Not totally clear on this $213,000 is in the dry cleaner account. And the clarification I'm looking for specifically is, if that money is there and available, is there anything that prevented MPCA from working with the dry cleaners and distributing that in this effort? Is the language in the bill what specifically needed to be passed in order to get that out the door to the dry cleaners? Maybe, like I say, I could use some clarification. Why hasn't it been used previous to this legislation being passed?
Commissioner Kudelka.
Chair and committee members, thank you for the question. The money comes into the account, and on a revolving basis, we then make those reimbursements. $213,000 is just what we have right now. We do it periodically when we have enough to be able to cover claims. These claims can be up to $100,000 at a time. If we were to follow current law, it would go to those who first come in, and many of those are property owners and not the dry cleaners. What Representative Hansen's bill does is put those dry cleaners, the operators who run the systems and who've paid the fees in, puts them earlier in the line. So the money will go to them first. Now, we can hold off making reimbursements for a little bit for legislation to pass, but we do that on a rolling basis. So if this bill is not passed and are enacted soon, that money has to go back out to those on the list. And that's going to go to others that are not the operators, the owner-operators. Some of them who've actually just owned a property where a dry cleaner was for a month is one of those on there instead of those who've paid it.
Representative Heintzman, did you have a follow-up?
Yes, I did. Thank you, Madam Chair. And here again, maybe Commissioner Kudelka could help me out. Obviously, there are some real challenges here. And with the declining number of dry cleaners out there, the dollars coming into the account are continuing to be a problem as it's distributed, at least the cost is distributed amongst fewer dry cleaners. Does MPCA at this time have a plan to try and resolve those issues with the dollars coming in? Because we're gonna run these folks right completely into the ground, they're gonna be out of business. And then we're going to be looking for money to try and solve these problems outside of the current formula anyway. So, I mean, it seems like this has been an ongoing issue for a long time. Maybe you could remind the members if you've had a plan, what it was, and if you don't or haven't had previously, what are the best solutions in your mind going forward?
Commissioner Kudelka.
Thank you, Chair and committee members. We do have a number of ideas. We have shared with the dry cleaner associations and a number of legislators about 8 or 9 different ideas because there are different ways. There is not a silver bullet to this. There is, as you mentioned, Representative, $650,000 each year coming into the account by statute that is less than the expenditures. But for instance, one example is to eliminate some of those that are eligible, especially those that are not paying the fee, the dry cleaner operators, instead those property management companies in that. Representative Hansen's bill gets us a good way there by prioritizing that. but that would be one way to do it. We have some other ideas too. We'd be happy to meet with you to go over with them in some more detail. You are correct. There are counts like this in other states, and they have closed or stopped taking applications for this very reason. The expenditures are far exceeding the amount of revenues coming in. So we think there's a mix between potential increases in revenue or cost sharing or eliminating some of those folks that are eligible for the projects. Those that would be eliminated, they would be doing the cleanups anyways to help their development in that. This was really focused to help dry cleaners collectively pay those costs, but those that are eligible are much more than the dry cleaner operators, and we think that's a way to do it.
Representative Heintzman, did you have any follow-up to that?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I may have some more questions later, but just a quick comment. I just want to thank Chair Hansen for working on this. We've been talking about a solution over the last 24 hours, and I understand that there may be some disagreement amongst some from the agency and the dry cleaners, and we're going to be working through those problems over the course of the session, but the sooner we get something rolling and the conversation started, the better. So just thank you, Mr. Chair, for having this issue brought up today.
Next up, I have Representative Keeler and then Representative Backer. Representative Keeler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just have a question. It's just a clarifying question because I'm just trying to understand all the fees here. You talked about some of your dry cleaners don't even have enough to pay their registration fees. What is the registration fee and what does that do to their business if they can't pay that this year? Is that creating an issue that some of our dry cleaners might be closing because of a registration fee? Or can you explain that to me a little bit more?
I don't know if Mr. Oney or Mr. Kadelko wants to take that one, but.
Madam Chair, I can take that.
Okay.
This is Keith Oney. Thank you. Thank you for the question, Representative. Basically, every year, everybody who is a dry cleaner in the state of Minnesota that uses a dry cleaning machine has to pay one of three different levels of fees based on their full-time equivalencies. And the problem that we have, obviously, is when this bill was written, you know, 25, 30 years ago, there was 350 of us paying into this, and now we're down under 100. So we have to make up $650,000 somehow, according to statute. So those fees every year keep going up as we lose more and more dry cleaners. Obviously, in the past couple of years, it's been more and more difficult as those fees have increased. But post-COVID, when we have a lot of work from home environments and people aren't back to work yet, obviously, we don't have the pieces coming in. So many of these businesses are making the tough decision right now. Do they pay that registration fee and not pay their electricity or their employees? So they take a gamble because they've used up all of their either savings, their retirement, their PPP money, whatever other grants they can have. And there's just too many holes in the ship to keep the thing afloat. So they say, well, I may not pay that registration fee now and live with the repercussions later. And just for the hopes that I can keep my doors open for another week, month, 2 months in order to get revenue in and then try to throw myself at the mercy of the court. Thank you, Representative, for the question.
Representative Keeler, did you have any follow-up?
I do. I guess I didn't necessarily answer my question of the dollar amount that the if I'm a dry cleaner, what is my registration fee obligation this year with the decline in businesses? Like, that's what I'm trying to figure out just in the dollar amount, what that could be.
Thank you for the question, Representative Madam Chair. Right now, the three levels of fees that they may have to pay. So if you're a smaller dry cleaner, you'll pay anywhere, I believe it's around $4,200 to $4,400 a year. A mid-sized dry cleaner would pay around $8,000 a year, and a larger dry cleaner may pay around $16,000 to $17,000 a year. And we're projecting that that number is going to go up by about 20% by next year just because of all the dry cleaners that are going out of business.
Representative Keeler, did you have any other follow-up on that?
I do, but that's fine. Thank you.
Okay. All right. We'll go to Representative Backer and then Representative Lewick.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. And just like Representative Heisman, I do want to thank the chair for working on this. These businesses are small businesses, and that's such a vital importance to our economy here in Minnesota. My question is, and this is coming from memory, so if I'm incorrect, I don't know if this goes to chair or MPCA or who, but my last year when we talked about this, instead of $255,000, weren't we looking at closer to $650,000, $660,000 to help the dry cleaners? What happened to that? The $400,000, or why did that get changed? I'm in the camp that we should beef up this fund to that level. So I don't know who can answer that question.
Madam Chair.
Chair Hansen, go ahead.
So in the fiscal year 19, we had appropriated $600,000 for reimbursement, and that, you know, there, Representative Backer, you may remember there were people who had maybe done the expense and had not been reimbursed for up to 3 years. So the Pollution Control Agency, and I know they have a list of who received those reimbursements for that first $600,000. A second $600,000 in FY20 was to go for a legal analysis because there was an attempt to try to bring the parties together to have Commissioner Kudelka said, try to find a long-term solution. And one of the possibilities was to look at whether old insurance policies could help with that. So doing a forensic legal analysis on insurance policies, that was appropriated $600,000. Of that $600,000, that's what prior to today, it was my understanding there was zero in the current dry cleaner account, and that there would be $255,000 left over unspent from the forensic study, the legal study on insurance policies. So what I'm trying to do when we get to the amendment, I was hoping to take that $255,000 and spend that on the dry cleaners, on the operators. We have since received the information that there's $213 in the dry cleaner account that could go and be prioritized to the operators. So that $255,000, if that that's in an FY19 appropriation that expires on June 30th of this year. So if that is not used, then it goes back into the remediation fund. And so that's where you see those extra dollars. So there was about $350,000 spent on a legal analysis, and it would be my intent to capture that. It was my intent to capture that for paying that backlog, that continuing backlog for reimbursement for owner-operators. If there are sufficient funds to make sure, if this bill passed and we can pay that with existing funds, then it would be my intent that $255 go into cost share for the dry cleaners to help reduce PERC in the future by getting the transition for the equipment. And Commissioner Kudelka can maybe clarify if I made any errors there, but I think that's accurate.
Okay. Representative Backer, did you have any follow-up?
Yeah, Madam Chair, I do appreciate that, Chair Hansen. Thank you. This goes to the Commissioner. What is being done right now? Is there a lot of, word a lot is maybe not the best choice, but what type of investigation or what type of work's being done with additional sites throughout the state? Is there a lot of work that's being folks looking for other potential little sites with dry cleaners that we have to do some cleanup and so forth? Is MPCA aggressively or moderately looking for these other sites or businesses that there has to be this additional investment for cleanup?
Commissioner Kudelka.
Thank you, Chair and committee members. It's a good question. Many dry cleaners are more urban areas that have municipal water. So when we had contamination plumes, it was not someone had a well there. And so while there was work to do cleanup, it was a lower cost. About 10 years ago, we found out those plumes actually not only have a potential to impact people's drinking water from a well, but we've learned about soil vapor intrusion, which is these volatile organic compounds such as PERC volatilize and they work their way up into people's homes and present air quality issues. And that's where we've now had to go back and look at all the different sites, and that's where we're seeing the risk. We're seeing homes that are built around dry cleaners that may not even be there anymore, or dry cleaners that are operating, that there are these plumes that are, we knew were down there, or but now we have more concern because of their impact into people's homes. That requires more investigation, more cleanup, and requires soil vapor mitigation systems to be installed in a home. So you may be familiar with a radon mitigation system, same type of technology, creating a vacuum underneath the home. And that is what needs to be done to protect homeowners, or if it's in a commercial business, for instance, a strip mall or some other type of business, to protect the occupants, the dry cleaners themselves, or someone who may be in there, whether it's a hardware store next to them, hair salon, or a childcare facility. It's to protect those folks from soil vapors. So soil vapors intrusion has brought on more cost for these cleanups than what were there 10 years ago.
Okay. Well, thank you, Commissioner. Appreciate that. Thank you. That's all I have right now, Madam Chair.
All right. Representative Lewick, you're next, and then Representative Green.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess this is more of a comment than a question. It would seem, first of all, it would make sense that $255,000 that didn't go to the trial lawyers or whatever you want to call, that did, you know, that legal analysis would go back into the dry cleaner fund and then be made available for dealing with operating dry cleaners. I think in the big picture of things, those legacy issues that are out there that Commissioner Kudelka talked about need to be moved over to that general mediation fund because there just ain't enough horses in the barn here to resolve those legacy issues with the dry cleaning industry that exists today. So it would seem and that's not exactly what Chair Hansen's amendment would do, but we have trouble keeping that fund where it's supposed to be. So why wouldn't we put the $255,000 in on top of the $213,000 and get that out to operating dry cleaners? And everybody is going to have to live with where they fit in the pecking order on the general remediation issue, which is a much more general, broader effort to remediate these sites out there. So that's just a general comment. I don't know if Chair Hansen is going to actually introduce his amendment, but it would seem that it would make sense to take that 255 and add it to the 213 and get on with directly aiding the dry cleaners right now. If we need additional legislation to make that hard switch and put that other category of legacy stuff into a different funding situation, we're probably way overdue to get that done. So that's just a general comment. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Green, you're up next.
Madam Chair, a question for Commissioner Kudelka. Commissioner, we hear a lot about all these sites that are that you're finding new evidence of more problems. What kind of a backlog do you have right now on these sites?
Commissioner Kudelka?
Excuse me, I've heard the word backlog be used, and I'd like to find out what you're looking at there.
Commissioner Kudelka?
Chair and committee members, there's a couple. We talked about the dry cleaner fund and the applications in for reimbursement. There's a backlog there, and that's where we've had most of our conversations. There are many sites out there that the agency is going back, and because of soil vapor intrusion, looking at to see if there, we looked at them for drinking water issues, if now there are soil vapor issues. So we do have efforts to do that. With the legislature's help two years ago, we were able to get more staff to do that, and we're going through that list where they're to do the work. Now, the underlying foundation of how our cleanup programs work, Superfund in that, is the polluter pays. So we do go back to the responsible party to do that type of cleanup work, but we do the initial investigation to see if there's an issue and whether they need to be pulled into the piece. Only in the case where there is no responsible party, someone's long gone, that's when the state is able to come in and cover those costs. And so there are sites out there that we take on the first risk, which is human health. And if there's direct exposures, we'll take care of that. And then we do have a backlog of then getting to a number of sites to be able to do the actual cleanup. And just alone those sites where there's not a potential responsible party or there's orphan sites is what the remediation fund is for. There is not enough money to cover those others where there are responsible parties there to be able to do the work, whether it's a dry cleaner, a plating company, large or small businesses. The concern is if we start doing it for one of them, we're breaking that underlying foundation of the Superfund program, and everyone is going to want the state to clean up the contamination that they created. So our backlog are in a couple of places. It's on those orphan sites we're working on, the reimbursements, and then also just double checking on some of these sites if responsible parties need to do more work because of soil vapors, because we want to make sure we're protecting those that live near there.
Representative Green, did you have any follow-up questions?
Yes, Madam Chair. I don't know if I got an answer as to how many. It sounds like there's just some out there. One of my concerns is that we're not really dealing with this problem in a substantial way, and the state is going to end up cleaning this up. Commissioner, you made the comment that you didn't want to single out one. Well, if we don't do something pretty soon, there may not be any left. Just in the last few years, if it sounds like we've gone from 300 and some down to just over 100 or somewhere between 1 and 200, that's a pretty substantial drop. And so I don't know if putting this off any longer is really to anyone's benefit. Not only the dry cleaners are suffering here, but the people who are having to deal with this problem are suffering. And so I think that this bill is probably a little overdue as it is. And is there any talk about maybe capping these fees to the dry cleaners so that we don't continue to raise this cost on them in a business that's already hurting and shrinking at the same time? Commissioner.
Commissioner Kanalka.
Chair and committee members, thank you for the question. There are a number of different areas for the number of sites for reimbursement. I can maybe tell you what that number is, but our larger investigations, we're looking at hundreds of different sites to go back and doing it. So I don't have a number in front of you. Sorry about that. You're correct. I did not get to that piece. We agree change needs to be done. And that's why we've put together 8 to 9 different ideas to choose from to make those changes, to really direct the money to the dry cleaners that are paying the fees, going to the operators and not the whole host of other people that are eligible under the statute. The way to do that is to change it and make them not eligible, to direct those resources that are coming in the fees to go to those operators. We think that's a way to do it. And there's other ways to make a fairer system for those that are doing the good work and not having to carry the burden of others. So I think we agree on that, and those changes need to be made. In terms of the fee caps, the statute says that the fees are amount collected is only $650,000. So that is capped by the law already. Only that much can be collected each year in total fees.
Representative Green?
Well, then just a comment. Maybe before we get too far in this committee could change the statute, because when you're looking at just over 100 dry cleaners, the $650,000 is going to end up being an enormous amount. And so we maybe have to start looking at that cap. But in the meantime, for right now, I think that it's probably pretty prudent that we get this bill passed. So thank you.
Any further member questions?
Madam Chair.
I see Representative Heinzman has raised his hand. Representative Heinzman, do you want to go ahead?
Sorry, it's a little slow there, Madam Chair, to hit the button, but this is actually for Chair Hansen. Could you maybe just briefly talk about the possibility of working to cap the fees like Representative Green was mentioning, except to cap them so that each individual business wasn't being so massively affected? We had briefly discussed it, and I know that there's talk about that from the Senate side. Just if you could just rush on that for a minute, that'd be great, Mr. Chair.
Chair Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Heinzman. What I'm attempting to do here is to salvage some part of the existing fiscal year's appropriations. Soon the governor's budget will be coming forward, and we will be taking up that. I commit to you and to the PCA and to the Dry Cleaners Association members that we are going to continue to have this conversation of how do we try to resolve this in the long run, because right now it's a death spiral where fewer and fewer have to pay more and more, and it doesn't work. So we know it doesn't work, but we've got to find some way that may include a cap, that may include other things of trying to resolve this. That's why I'm asking for your support for this bill, and I will move the amendment with a little bit of a modification, because it's dealing with this fiscal year, where if we can get the reimbursement, that takes a debt off of existing dry cleaners. It also, if we can provide them with transitioning off, that prevents future contamination. And then having that ban, the amendment will move that farther out. But if we can get them transitioning off of PERC, that prevents continuing to dig the hole on contamination by having more contamination. And this, and I called it perchlorate, it's perchloroethylene, is a very nasty chemical, very nasty. And if we can reduce that use and then eventually eliminate it, that helps us out. So this package is not what it was 8 months ago. It's not what I wish it was, but it's the best we can get right now. And there's still disagreement about it. But I would work to continue on this, and would invite all members of the committee to try to figure out, you know, if we can work together in the long run on this. This will just be one larger part of the budget, because the dry cleaner fund and the remediation fund are not going to be solvent without some engagement. I don't know if that's what you're looking for, Representative Heinzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Excuse me, Madam Chair.
Representative Heinzman, did you have any follow-up, or are you good?
I was just going to thank the chair for that answer.
All right, Chair Hansen, did you want to move the A2 amendment?
I would like to move the A2 amendment, and maybe if staff can help. I think on the first A where it talks, I think we need to clarify that 255 is coming from the unused existing appropriation. Maybe that takes citing. I would move the A2 amendment, Madam Chair.
Mr. Chair?
Mr. Eloff?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I've been trying to follow the discussion, and if I have successfully, I have maybe a suggestion as to how to proceed with amending or changing the A2 amendment, if I can present that and see if people like it. Looking at the amendment now, on page 1, line 10, delete 255,000 and insert 213,000. Page 1, line 17, delete fiscal year 2021 is appropriated from the remediation fund 2 and insert I'm going to have to go off screen for a second here. I just wrote it down. Oops. Trying to find it. Okay. Sorry. let me just read it then. So again, page one, line 17, delete fiscal year 2021 is appropriated from the remediation fund two and insert unexpended funds from the transfer made under laws 2019, first special session, chapter four, article one, section two, subdivision 10, paragraph C, shall be expended by. And then finally, page one, line 22, delete the words, this is a one-time appropriation and insert the money made available under this paragraph.
I would incorporate those changes into the A2 amendment. Members, I know this is in Zoom land here. I would ask Mr. Eliff to state that again and just to make sure it's clear.
Yes. On the amendment, on the A2 amendment, page one, line 10, delete $255,000 and insert $213,000. Page one, line 17, delete fiscal year 2021 is appropriated from the remediation fund two and insert unexpended funds from the transfer made under laws 2019, first special session, chapter four, article one, section two, subdivision 10, paragraph C, shall be expended by. And then page one, line 22, delete, this is a one-time appropriation and insert the money made available under this paragraph. So what's being done in paragraph B there is removing the appropriation from the remediation fund and substituting the unexpended money that's left over from the $600,000.
That is my intent, members.
All right, so we're going to Representative Hansen has moved the A2 amendment, and are we going to say as amended to that A2 amendment?
Mr. Eliff, what would be the appropriate if I've incorporated those changes?
I'd still call it an oral amendment.
Okay.
So do we want to vote on the oral amendment first and then the entire amendment? Is that the protocol?
It can just be incorporated, or you can do it in two steps.
All right, so we'll incorporate that oral amendment into the A2 amendment that Representative Hansen is moving. Is there any other discussion on that A2 amendment with that oral amendment included? I don't see any hands raised or anything, so let's take the roll on the A2 amendment.
Hansen, Rick.
Hansen, Rick, aye.
Hansen, aye. Wasilewick, Amy.
Wasilewick, aye.
Wasilewick, aye. Heinzelman, Josh.
Heinzelman, aye.
Heinzelman, aye. Acom, Patty.
Acom, aye.
Acom, aye. Ackland, Susan.
Ackland, aye.
Ackland, aye. Backer, Jeff.
Backer, aye.
Backer, aye. Becker Finn, Jamie.
Becker Finn, aye.
Becker Finn, aye. Eklund, Rob.
Eklund, aye.
Eklund, aye. Fisher, Peter.
Fisher, aye.
Fisher, aye. Green, Steve.
Green, aye.
Green, aye. Igo, Spencer.
Igo, aye.
Igo, aye. Jordan, Sydney.
Jordan, aye.
Jordan, aye. Keeler, Heather.
Keeler, aye.
Keeler, aye. Lee, Fu.
Lee, aye.
Lee, aye. Lippert, Todd.
Lippert, aye.
Lippert, aye. Lewick, Dale.
Lewick, aye.
Lewick, aye. Morrison, Kelly.
Morrison, aye.
Nelson, Nathan.
Nelson, aye.
Nelson, aye. Tice, Tama.
Tice, aye.
Tice, aye. 19 ayes and zero nays.
All right, the motion prevails that the A2 amendment is adopted. Representative Hansen, I know we've already sort of gone through the discussion of the bill. Any final questions on this, or Chair Hansen, any final remarks on the bill as amended?
Thank you, members. I know this is going to, there's going to continue to be more information that likely will come as the governor's budget comes, but I believe this is an important bipartisan step to try to resolve problems both for the environment and then for small business. So I appreciate your support on the amendment, and I would ask for your support on passing the bill. I would renew my motion that House File, I got a call right in the middle of that.
Representative Hansen renews his motion that House File 91, as amended, be recommended to be re-referred to Ways and Means. The clerk will take the roll on the motion.
Hansen, Rick.
Hansen, Rick, aye.
Hansen, aye. Wozelik, Amy.
It's 3998 when you do that. Yeah.
Wozelik, Amy.
Wozelik, aye.
Wozelik, aye. Heinzman, Josh.
Heinzman, aye.
Heinzman, aye. Acom, Patty.
Acom, aye.
Acom, aye. Ackland, Susan.
Ackland, aye.
Ackland, aye. Backer, Jeff.
Backer, aye.
Backer, aye. Becker, yeah, Finn, Jamie.
Becker, Finn, aye.
Ackland, Rob.
Aye. Ackland, aye.
Ackland, aye. Fisher, Peter.
Fisher, aye.
Fisher, aye. Green, Steve.
Green, aye.
Green, aye. I go, Spencer.
I go, aye.
I go, aye. Jordan, Sydney.
Jordan, aye.
Jordan, aye. Keeler, Heather.
Keeler, aye.
Keeler, aye. Lee, Fu.
Lee, aye.
Lee, aye. Lippert, Todd.
Lippert, aye.
Lippert, aye. Lewick, Dale.
Lewick, aye.
Lewick, aye. Morrison, Kelly.
Morrison, aye.
Morrison, aye. Nelson, Nathan.
Nelson, aye.
Nelson, aye. Tice, Tama.
Tice, aye.
Tice, aye. That is 19 ayes and zero nays.
The motion prevails, and House File 91 as amended is on its way to Ways and Means. With that, I will turn the gavel back over to Chair Hansen.
Thank you, Representative Wozelik. We are going to now proceed with the overview for the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, and we have with us Deputy Commissioner Peter Tester, and also Assistant Commissioner Greta Gauthier and Assistant Commissioner Craig McDonald. Commissioner Tester, welcome.
Thank you, Chairman Hansen and members of the committee. Thank you very much for having the Pollution Control Agency come and introduce ourselves, as well as the agency and some of the operations to some of you who are new to it, and a refresher for those who have been here before. Chairman Hansen, I'd like to present a brief PowerPoint as I go through, if that would be okay.
Proceed. And I don't know if you did state your name for the record, just go ahead. I lost a little bit in translation there.
Okay. Peter Tester, Deputy Commissioner of the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. Just trying to share my screen here, or Greta, if you want to do that.
I am not able, Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Greta Gauthier, Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. I'm not able to share my screen until you end sharing yours, Peter. I apologize, Mr. Chairman. We are not as familiar with Zoom as others. All right, here we go.
Mr. Chairman, while Greta's getting that up, I'll just start the presentation again. Thank you very much. I've been with the agency since February of 2019. I'm an environmental lawyer by training and practice. I worked as an environmental lawyer for 29 years, both in the public sector and the private sector, before coming back to state service at the PCA back in February. So thank you again for letting us present to you. Greta, if you'll go to the next slide. You know, our mission is one that is simple but quite powerful: to protect and improve the environment and human health. And I wanted to touch upon this phrase itself because it really lies at the core of what we do. It's the bedrock of the programs that we implement. It is the bedrock for decisions we make on particular permits, enforcement actions. It's policies that we advocate in front of the legislature, in front of communities, to Minnesota citizens, are all premised with this as being the sort of the guidestone. And all of that is within the parameters that are set by this legislature and then also by the federal legislature, because as most of you know, the federal legislature has given the MPCA the authority to implement three primary environmental law programs in air, water, and waste. And so we have to abide by, obviously, the dictates of our state legislature and federal legislature. And then our vision. So we have a vision of the Pollution Control Agency being a national leader in delivering services that support healthy people, ecosystems, and a thriving economy. And really that is what we try to do with the policies that we implement, the advocacy that we make at both the state level and at the federal level, is to try to take the best practices that are there in our sister states and at the US EPA on how to protect and improve the environment and human health, and bring them here, working with the legislature to make a difference in people's lives, to make the water cleaner, to make the air cleaner that we breathe, and the overall situation safer. So what do we do? Greta, if you'll go to the next slide. You know, the MPCA, we monitor environmental quality, we offer technical and financial assistance, we enforce state regulations, we find and clean up spills or leaks that can affect the environment. We develop statewide policy, we support environmental education and work by many organizations, and we help ensure that pollution doesn't have a disproportionate impact on any group of citizens. And increasingly, I would say that our focus is on pollution prevention rather than just controlling it or cleaning it up. We have a specific division within the agency called the Resource Management and Assistance Division, which is led by Dave Benke, who has been up to testify in past sessions to this committee, that focuses on pollution prevention. It focuses on voluntary, on innovative environmental approaches, technical assistance, education, and comprehensive system-based approaches to environmental problems. And that's the kind of sort of sophisticated approach we want to take to managing some of these problems. And I focus in on sort of the pollution prevention because sometimes it gets doesn't get as much press in the Star Tribune and some of the other advocates, but it's a critical component of what we do in the business assistance that we bring to regulated parties, to businesses, and to individuals. Some of that you're probably aware of. We have the Volkswagen settlement for electric infrastructure for transportation. The goal of that, as you know, is to reduce NOx reductions from projects that utilize the VW Environmental Mitigation Trust Fund. We also have the Eco Experience at the Minnesota State Fair, where we interact with over 200,000 people every year on a whole variety of pollution prevention projects, what we're doing. We have a whole slew of waste reduction, sustainable materials management, which is an effort to reduce waste throughout the life cycle of materials, and we work with counties and cities and municipalities to try to do it. And so those parts of that effort at recycling and market development for recycling through our grants and grant funding for projects that will build lasting capacity to support recycling markets in Minnesota are critically important in areas that we're putting more and more efforts on. Slide three, Greta, thanks. So I won't spend too much time on this other than to say, obviously, environmental law is very complicated. It's a combination of state and federal law. The three main laws that we are delegated by the federal government and then augmented with our own laws here in the state of Minnesota are the Clean Water Act, the Clean Air Act, the Resource Conservation and Recovery Act, which deals with proper management of hazardous and non-hazardous solid waste. For new members, I guess the key point that we always like to mention is that the complexity of our work, of your work, really legislating over our agency, it depends in part upon whether or not the agencies have federal delegations like the PCA. So there are PCA and health and the agricultural departments are governed by state laws, but have been delegated authority by the federal government. And therefore, we have to abide by many of the dictates that the federal law requires for us. And some of the bills and some of the efforts that we make, sometimes we can't advance because they conflict with federal law, or they become more difficult because they're complicated by that. So maybe I think the most exciting part of this is really just who our partners are. And we work with many partners, with citizens, communities, businesses, governments, environmental groups, educators, all to prevent pollution and conserve resources. And these partnerships are absolutely fundamental to being able to getting greater commitment and personal responsibility for the environment with respect to regulated parties. We work to minimize and the use and generation of toxic chemicals and products and materials with all levels of these partners. They're critical for restoring and preserving the quality of our waters, working with our soil and water conservation districts on wetlands, on stream mitigation, improving the quality, developing solutions to climate change challenges. Everything depends on our work with these partners. And we do that with technical assistance. We do it with financial assistance. We do it through individual grants and wider areas. I'd also say that we have a very strong network of about 1,200 citizen monitors who voluntarily monitor water quality around the state every single year. That's part of our data collection work, which is sort of the foundational science part of the work we do, which allows us then to decide how do we going to make changes to water quality in a particular stream or a lake. First, we have to know the chemical composition of there, what pollutants are there, where those pollutants are coming from, and how can we take steps to try to minimize and prevent those from pollutants. And all of that depends upon a lot of data collection. We rely heavily on these citizen monitors who have been doing this work for many years. Next one, Greta, thanks. A little bit about our organizational structure. We have the main office in St. Paul and then these six regional offices, which are really critical. I mean, I think this is our presence out in the community to interface with people and to advocate for the programs that we're having. We have three in the southern region, sort of three in the northern region, and a lot of our programs are divided that way based upon the ecosystems that are there. So the agricultural part of the state on the western side, and particularly down in the southwest, and some of the northwest boreal forests up in the northeast. But we spend a lot of time going out there. The assistant commissioners, Greta, Kirk, Craig, myself, and particularly the commissioner are out in the regions prior to COVID a lot. That was one of the dictates of Governor Walz, is that he wanted the commissioners of his agencies to be out meeting with people in Minnesota one-on-one away from the Capitol as part of his One Minnesota plan. And so we were very active in that effort. And we will be again once we're all back. But we see this regional structure to being critical to have our presence in these communities so that people know who we are, can interact with us when they have to, and we can be a source of education to them as well. We have about 75% of our agency in St. Paul, and then about 25% are located in the regional offices. I won't go through this too much, but you can see we're a lot of scientists. We're data-driven, we're science-driven, we're fact-based. That's what the fundamental bedrock of most of our programs, most of our decisions on water quality standards, on cleanup standards, remediation, enforcement are based upon what are we seeing and what are the facts. And so we need that high level of STEM knowledge within the agency. And with 70% of the staff being scientists, we have that. Like many agencies, we are going to see a brain drain with the passing of the baby boomers. And so we're doing a lot of work now trying to figure out how do we transfer a lot of that institutional knowledge to younger generations and recruit more people from different backgrounds and different ethnic groups, different parts of the state into our agency. And so we're doing a lot of work with the Department of Natural Resources and the Board of Soil Water Resources on trying to recruit new people into the agency. Greta, thanks. We have these seven divisions that our work is bedrocked in with three of them, the operations, the environmental analysis outcomes, and resource management, providing information and data across all of those seven divisions. Thanks, Greta. Next. A little bit about where our money comes from. It's broken down, and we can give you the actual numbers here, but very little comes from the general fund. About 3% is from the general fund, the bulk of it coming from environmental and the remediation fund that you all have been talking about already. And then this is our distribution out. And as Commissioner Kadalka spoke about, we spend a lot of time working on remediation, both for large sites and small sites, and that takes up a lot of our funding work. The last, I think it's the last slide, Greta, our trade-offs. Yes. Is that right?
I actually put in, we actually opened up the wrong one, but here you go.
Here you go.
Yeah, the last slide.
Yeah, if you can do this one, because we're starting to get hands up and we've got about 20 yep. minutes left, so go for it. Yeah,
well, very quickly then, Chairman Hansen, it's just that, you know, we see, I think, a couple things about that, you know, human health and environment is constantly evolving. The fact that science is always advancing is a great thing for Minnesota overall. We have scientific innovation regularly leads to improved quality of life, and we have a lot of scientific innovation at our universities, at our agencies, and so we can be ahead of the curve of this. It also means that we have to be constantly looking at what's the next piece of science that's looking at pollutant loads, is looking at new risks that come from better knowledge about chemicals, whether it's the PERC that you were talking about, or TCE, or lead, or mercury, we're learning more and more about these chemicals of concern, how they interact in the environment, how they get incorporated into humans. And so, but I think I will stop it there to give time, and thank you for your patience.
Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a couple of questions that are somewhat unrelated from the overview, and something maybe you could help me with, Mr. Chair. We're just curious when DNR was able to come in this week. Obviously, we got to visit with the commissioner. I'm just wondering if there is a timeline or you established that for MPCA. In other words, do we expect the commissioner to be in soon, or what's the plan?
Representative Heintzman, I would expect when the budget presentation comes that the commissioner would be here.
Mr. Chairman.
And Ms. Gauthier.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, that's correct. I apologize, the commissioner was not able to be here today, but she will be here for the presentation of the governor's budget recommendations. Thank you.
Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My only follow-up then would be, any idea when the budget discussion will be happening?
Representative Heintzman, I think it's fluid.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Obviously, our members have a lot of questions. There's a significant conversation happening statewide about some obvious issues. And I know that every time I mention California cars, people bristle a little bit. But I think it's important that we do have that conversation sooner than later with the commissioner.
I think we've heard you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Akam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you to our speakers for coming today. I certainly appreciate the presentation, and I wholeheartedly support the mission of the MPCA to protect and improve the environment and human health. And with the impacts on our environment from climate change, I'm sure you could guess that I might ask about this, but with the impacts on our environment, from climate change, and last week with the greenhouse gas emissions inventory that came out, can you help me understand how is MPCA going to adjust to try and meet some of the goals that we need to meet in order to limit the impacts of climate change?
Commissioner Tester.
Mr. Chairman and Representative, if I could have Craig McDonald, our Assistant Commissioner for Air and Climate, respond to that.
Commissioner McDonald, if you could identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair and members, this is Craig McDonald. I serve as Assistant Commissioner for Air and Climate Policy. Thank you for the question, Representative Acomb. I think as we saw in the greenhouse gas inventory report there, as you mentioned last week, Minnesota is not on track to meet the goals of the Bipartisan Next Generation Energy Act, which was passed in 2007. That statutory goal has a goal requirement of a 50% reduction of greenhouse gas emissions from 2005 levels by 2050. And so in order for us to take action and to meet those goals, the governor has issued Executive Order 1937, which set out a climate subcabinet and tasked that subcabinet to identify policies and strategies to help meet those goals. And the commissioner of the MPCA, Commissioner Bishop, is the chair of that subcabinet. So as a subcabinet, the MPCA has been convening the group now for over a year and breaking out kind of strategies and goals and conversations around them according to sector. And those sectors are familiar to folks who have the greenhouse gas inventory report in front of them or read it last week, based on electricity generation, buildings, natural and working lands, which does include agriculture, looking at green jobs, as well as industrial process emissions too. And so based on that work, the MPCA is working with our peer agencies to elevate some of those strategies with a real focus in areas of continuing to advance the ball. And this is led by the Department of Commerce on the power generation sector to have our grid continue to be as clean as possible, right? The more that we can reduce emissions in that power generation sector, the better. Reductions there are going to help rise all boats in kind of a tide. So that's an important piece. The other area where we're continuing to focus is in the transportation sector. The transportation sector is the leading sector for greenhouse gas emissions in Minnesota, and that's consistent with national emissions as well. So that is one of the areas where Representative Heintzman alluded to. The MPCA is conducting a Clean Cars Minnesota rulemaking, and we're currently in the public comment period for that rulemaking. But also equally important is recognizing that transportation is going to take a multi-prong approach. There's no silver bullet in transportation to continue to reduce emissions. So MPCA is working with agencies like the Minnesota Department of Agriculture and looking at how biofuels and just low carbon fuels generally may advance the ball there. And so those are two of the focus areas that we continue to work on. Also excited about some of the work that MDA, so the Department of Agriculture, the Board of Water and Soil Resources, Bowser, is doing to continue to look at best management practices for our agricultural lands. I think the Minnesota Agricultural Water Quality Certification Program is a great program and success story. And it's a multi-agency program whereby producers are incented to continue to adopt some of those land management practices that reduce greenhouse gas emissions and protect water quality. So those are just a couple of the focused areas that we are continuing to look at. And you know, we will continue to work closely with the legislature and our peer agencies to see how we can continue to advance the ball.
Representative Acomb, I've got three other hands up. If you have a follow-up, is it okay if you follow up directly?
Yeah, absolutely. I just wanted to thank them for prioritizing climate change and the work they are doing on that. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
So Representative Becker-Finn, then Representative Lewick, and then Representative Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm wondering if you could speak a little bit more about the health impact. I know that in your stated purpose, protecting the health of Minnesotans is a top priority, but it's been my, and it's not news to all of you with the MPCA, but part of my community was impacted by water gremlin, and many of us have continued to work on issues such as working with PFAS chemicals and what we can do. Just wondering if you can speak about how you work together with the Minnesota Department of Health to make sure that those health priorities are where they should be and that the work is getting done. You know, I know when we're dealing with different agencies, it tends to fall into, well, you know, pointing fingers and not necessarily getting to the heart of the work that we need to do and actually protecting people. So just wondering if you can talk about how that relationship works and, you know, ideas you have for ways we could do a better job.
Commissioner Chester.
Chairman Hansen and Representative Becker Finn, I'll speak a little bit to that, and then perhaps Craig or Greta can as well, or maybe Kirk. But we work very closely with the Minnesota Department of Health, the Minnesota Department of Agriculture, Commerce on health-related issues. We have a regular group that meets at the assistant commissioner level, and Kirk Kadelka, Commissioner Kadelka, is one of those that's led that, where we're meeting regularly, and he can speak to that effort as a way of both working on specific issues, whether that might be the lead emissions issues from Water Gremlin or larger initiatives that we're trying to do in incorporating new health risk standards, health-based levels that the Commissioner of Health has promulgated, and how do we work those into the permits and the enforcement actions that the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency is doing. Kirk, would you like to speak a little bit about that collaboration and how we do that more directly?
Commissioner Kadelka.
Sure. Thank you, Chair and committee members. For the record, again, my name is Kirk Kadelka with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. As Deputy Commissioner mentioned, we meet on a leadership level from our programs frequently to tackle various topics along this line. And then we also have our program connections. And I was going to use an example of PFAS, how we've built a cross-agency lateral team that it has a staff level team and a leadership level team to address those issues that go beyond our borders. As the representative mentioned, to protect human health and the environment from those environmental factors, it is really more than our agencies. And so in that team, the PFAS lateral team, we have Department of Health, ourselves, Department of Natural Resources, and the Minnesota Department of Agriculture that we have that conversation. And then we also have conversations, and the Department of Health loops us in when they're looking to make various health risk limits or health-based value changes and seeks out our opinions on which ones we're seeing that we may need for the work we do, whether it's a cleanup program or our industrial permitting process. Thank you.
Representative Becker Finn.
No follow-up at this time, Mr. Chair.
Representative Lewick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to go back to the comment about renewable fuels, biofuels, and it would appear from what I can see, the governor's California car standards is at cross purposes with Minnesota's biofuels effort. As I look at what how California deals with that, they don't produce literally any ethanol, and they're not really in the game on that. So how are you going to reconcile that if you go forward with the California standards? From what I can see, you're going to really have a problem with continuing to support renewable fuels, particularly the ethanol stuff, which Minnesota's by far the leader in and has no comparison to California. So there's you've got a real dichotomy here with the direction your California auto standards are going and long-standing effort with biofuels. How do you explain that dichotomy?
Commissioner Tester.
Chairman Hansen and Representative Luke, I'd ask Craig McDonald to respond to that.
Commissioner McDonald.
Chair Hansen and Representative Lewick, I would say that, you know, it's important to note that the vehicle emission standards being proposed by Minnesota are just that. They're tailpipe emission standards, and they don't regulate the fuel that you put into an internal combustion engine. So that's an important thing to note. So to the extent that we can develop biofuels and continue to promote agricultural practices in partnership with our peer agencies like Bowser and the Minnesota Department of Agriculture, I think there is an opportunity to do that and to meet our goals, to see those reductions that we need in the transportation sector to put us on track to meet or exceed the Next Generation Energy Act. It won't be through just the clean car standards alone. There is a role for biofuels and that opportunity to see those lower carbon intense fuels. And I think it's really important that those biofuels also are, you know, part of the holistic process, which also looks at the transportation sector generally to understand communities who want to increase, you know, biking or walking or other means of transportation as well. It's going to take that multi-prong approach. There's not a silver bullet, and I do believe there is a role for biofuels here.
Representative Lewick.
Well, thank you, and I think we've still got a program that may be at cross purposes here, because you're going to impact the types of vehicles we drive, and biofuels and the E10 and E15 are a big deal. But a second area that I'd like to get a little, where are we at relative to field work because of the restrictions on COVID-19 and getting things done? And do we have any hiccups right now, technical hiccups out there with, and I'm talking particularly some of our bigger construction projects, an example, you know of any technical issues that are holding up work relative to pipelines or mining operations that the agency is trying to sort through right now?
Commissioner Tester, that's kind of a big question. We've got two other hands up I'd like to get through. You know, maybe you can follow up or we follow up later on that.
Sure. Chairman Hansen, Representative Lewick, we'd be happy to connect up with you directly and get you answers to those questions.
Mr. Chair, thank you very much. Yeah, I appreciate that. I just, because of the COVID-19 situation, we certainly don't want to see that get in the way or slow things down if it's not necessary, particularly if you're trying to resolve technical issues with ongoing operations and you haven't quite got out of the woods yet on that, on some of those. So, in fact, I mean, I'll touch base with Ms. Gauthier on that offline.
Representative Lee and then Representative Wozlawick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Commissioner. In November of 2020 last year, we saw several members of your Environmental Justice Advisory Group resign from the agency. Just wanted to see and hear what is the agency doing to really regain the trust of our Black, Indigenous, and people of color communities throughout the state of Minnesota.
Commissioner Tester.
Chairman Hansen, Representative Lee. Yes, you know, we did have a large number of the members of the Environmental Justice Advisory Group resign. Some of them resigned over very specific issues related to the Line 3 project. Others resigned because of concerns with positions we were taking. Some, frankly, resigned because they were part of organizations that were challenging the state's decision, and they didn't feel in good conscience that they could both be on our advisory group at the same time as they were challenging. And all of those are absolutely legitimate reasons. I think there are still at least five members of the committee who decided to stay on and were interested in looking at sort of the long-term systemic changes that we need to make both internally within the agency and externally with how we manage environmental human health to better address some of the equity disparities that exist. So we are working with them very, very closely, the ones that have remained on, and we respect the decisions of those that decided to leave. I think from our standpoint, equity, diversity, inclusion, environmental justice are long-term changes, and you have to look at the whole panoply of what this agency is doing on those efforts to, I think, get a real true picture as to where we are and where we need to go. And so, focusing in on one particular decision by the agency, while that's certainly anybody's right and is a legitimate aspect of our decision making, it is a much broader group of decisions that we're making and policies we're making to effectuate environmental justice in Minnesota. So I hope that answered Representative Lee.
And if you could follow up with Representative Lee if he has any questions. Representative Wozlawick. And we've got 5 minutes left.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just wondering if anyone from the agency, when you went through your overview, you noted that remediation was a large chunk of what you do and what where the money goes. I'm wondering if anyone could speak to sort of how long an average remediation process takes. We've been at it for like almost 2 years with Water Gremlin in my district right now. And so I'm wondering if anyone could speak to that, and I'll also follow up afterwards to get some more info.
maybe Commissioner Gauthier? Or...
I guess I would probably, Mr. Chairman, thank you, and Representative Wasilek. I think Commissioner Kadelka is still on the phone, and he his responsibilities include the remediation division and the cleanup, so I will defer to him for that knowledge.
Commissioner Kadelka.
Thank you, Chair and committee members. It really, Representative, depends on the site. The investigation can take a full a number of years to get the full understanding and extent and magnitude of the issues. If we're dealing with constituents that are newer to the agency and we need to work with the Department of Health to come together on risk values to be able to direct the cleanup, that can take a while. Our primary effort is always first eliminating that direct pathway to human health. So making sure that's addressed and then investigation. And sometimes cleanups can take years or decades depending on what's needed. For instance, repairing a groundwater aquifer that's been damaged and cleaning that up can take a very long amount of time. That's why we always prioritize at first addressing that pathways to human health.
Maybe if you can also follow up, Representative Heintzman, I'd like to get Representative Jordan in under the wire here, and then I'll close with you. Representative Jordan.
Yes, I have a follow-up question to what Representative Lee asked. I wasn't sure that I heard the second half of his question answered about repairing harm to communities. Can you talk to me a little bit about, and since much of the Environmental Justice Advisory Committee resigned, including a constituent of mine, can you talk to me about what the status of that advisory committee is and if new members have been appointed to that board, and then what that work is ongoing and what it looks like?
Commissioner Tester.
Yeah. Chairman Hampson, Representative Jordan, the environmental justice group is still ongoing. There are currently at least five members of them. They are meeting with Helen YQ is our director of tribal liaison and director of community engagement, and with Commissioner Bishop directly. We are meeting with them at the present time. I don't believe there's any decision to expand beyond those five individuals right now, but we're looking at a whole host of activities that they might be interested in bringing to our attention. In fact, the Environmental Justice Advisory Committee will be coming to speak to the senior leaders of the MPCA in 2 to 3 weeks for about an hour and a half to both introduce themselves, to hear for us to hear from them directly, in addition to them talking to the commissioner and talking to Helen YQ, but to talk to the whole leadership about what they would like to see and to hear from us about what we were going to do. We've also been out meeting and talking with them on a very frequent basis on Zoom calls and that type of thing. So those are some of the areas that I'm aware of. I hope that was
an answer. Perhaps we can follow up directly with members who are interested in that particular topic. Representative Heintzman, quickly for the end.
Mr. Chair, I'm wondering, I have a number of members who didn't even raise their hand as they have many questions and we're running out of time. I think we had a 27-page presentation and barely got through just a few of those pages. Do you plan on bringing MPCA back to at least allow for some more questions and maybe get through a presentation?
Yes, they will be back.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And one question when they come back, there's a certificate of need for landfills in the metro area. I'm concerned about solid waste is our silent and growing problem, particularly with COVID and single-use garbage. And so maybe if we can address that a bit when you come back, because I think we all produce garbage and we're producing more of it. So next week we will be having on Tuesday, the Minnesota Zoo come and Representative Eklund's bill, which have been introduced in several special sessions relating comprehensive CWD. So more unfinished business on Tuesday. And then Thursday, we have yet to set the agenda for that. And with that, it is 2:30 and we are adjourned. Thank you.